When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. I am joined by Christopher Pacheco, the numbers guy on Twitter, and we are here to do our weekly NFL DFS GPP breakdown. Just, you know, kind of looking through the slates, looking at some of the injuries, talking about some early ownership projections, looking at some of the potential game stacks. I will say the worst part of my week by far, this Houston-Tampa Bay game not being on the main slate is it's a real bummer, because Jameis and these peripheral wide receivers on the Saturday slate, they are just going to be the uber chalk, just to a really insane degree. But on the main slate, they would have just been, you know, they would have been a controllable amount of owned. So that's bumming me out.
Yeah, definitely. I really wish that game was on the main slate as well. Obviously, he's going to have a lot of value. No Godwin, no Evans now for Jameis. Dude is rolling though right now, so it's been quite a treat to watch. It's either interception or touchdown with the guy, and then he's been thrown for a million yards. So, been really fun. But yeah, like you said, unfortunately, not a part of main.
Yeah, he actually is. He's got, it's like 930 something yards for him to break the single season passing record. And his pace from the last two games would have him breaking that. Probably not going to do it without Evans or Godwin, yeah. But it certainly would be something. So a few of the big injury concerns that we have for this weekend: Josh Jacobs listed as questionable. I think there's no way he plays. It sounded like the only reason he played in the Raiders' last game in Week 15 was because that was the last game at the Oakland Coliseum before the team moves to Las Vegas. So I'm not sure if our projections have him in or out, but I would imagine that if he starts Josh Jacobs or DeAndre Washington, $4,000 on DraftKings, he's going to be the stone cold highest owned player. Maybe one of the highest owned players that we see all year long.
Well, our projections have Jacobs as in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's not been declared out. I think that he is unlikely to play though.
Okay. That's fair to be honest. I get where you're coming from with the narrative of them obviously leaving Oakland and whatnot. And that's a big reason why he played last week. But like, I don't know, man. He it's not that
bro, he tweeted. He tweeted, "I only played for the city." He tweeted it, bro.
Well, if he tweeted it, dude.
If he tweeted it, that means it's got to be a lock, right?
I guess it's a lock, but I mean, I'm just looking at his workload. He had like 24 carries.
Oh, he got, yeah, he got all the ball. Yeah.
He got a bunch of volume. So, I mean, yeah, maybe end up right. And Washington obviously would end up being super chalky. And I you know what? The line almost kind of tells me a little bit, right? Like, I think the Chargers are favored for almost 7 points.
Yeah.
And I know that they're a better team than Oakland, but like, I don't know. That line seems a little bit inflated to me. Yeah, maybe they know something we don't.
What should the Chargers be favored by that many points for? You know, they're the Chargers.
I mean, they're the Chargers. I know they're at home, but
home doesn't even matter for the Chargers.
Yeah. They're going to lose in a heartbreaking fashion anyway.
So looking at the projections for running backs, a few things. The names at the top of the value chart for running backs, Alvin Kamara, has there been a more tilting player than Alvin Kamara this year? I got to think that this projection will probably be adjusted over the course of the week a little bit.
I don't know, Davis. I don't know. I mean, the dude is still getting the volume, no?
He is.
Honestly, it still seems like he's still getting his 20 touches a week. I mean, I honestly don't know what to – I own him in season long, and I cannot describe to you how frustrating of an experience it's been because he's still so talented that I can't just flat out bench him. I just don't have better options than him. But at the same time, is he playing hurt? I mean, a lot of people seem to be thinking that way.
The conjecture is just that the ankle injury has really limited him. His yards per target is down to 5.6, despite his catch rate being a career high, 83.9%. He has only, yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is he has only 2 touchdowns this year, and that's that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, his yards per touch stuff is not that much different, but if you're going to go from 13 touchdowns his rookie year, 18 touchdowns his second season, now he has only 2 touchdowns. I mean, that's going to be the biggest difference in his value, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he's regressed hard. It's been hard for him, but whether he's playing hurt, whether it's regression, which obviously it's a thing here, but also the Saints are using Taysom Hill this year, like
a lot,
way more. Yeah. And that's been really frustrating. I mean, there's been instances where they're like at the one or the two, and it's not Kamara, you know, getting the ball. It's really frustrating, but I think no one's playing the guy unless it's showdown. At least that's my thinking right now. Like, how can you play him?
Yeah, my guess is his ownership percentage is going to be very low, but he is going to be all over our optimals. The second running back that we have is Devonta Freeman, the third running back, Melvin Gordon, the fourth running back, Adrian Peterson, $5,000 on DraftKings showing up as a very, and I mean, I can't even disagree with it. He's just getting all the carries.
Yeah, he is. Price tag's okay. 2 matchups, fine. But there's no way this is chalk, right? Is this chalk?
No, I think,
okay.
To me, I think the most owned running backs are going to be, obviously McCaffrey's always going to get ownership. Chris Carson's going to get a ton of ownership, great matchup at home against Arizona. No Rashad Penny. I think our stuff, we have him for 68% market share of the rushing attempts. I think that might be, a little low. And then Saquon, our stuff does not love him, but I would imagine that he's going to be pretty popular as well. I think another guy that our stuff likes that is not going to be as owned is going to be Leonard Fournette, because I just think, like, what are the Jaguars even playing for? Like, they're just so bad. The on-field product is so rough. It's just hard to imagine Fournette getting in a positive game script.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but he still gets so much volume, right? Regardless. It always feels like even if they're down, you know, 3 scores, the guy's still going to get like 12 targets or something insane. So I still think, you know, he's valuable in GPPs.
And yeah, I mean,
I would think that game in general, right, is pretty interesting from a DFS perspective. It's in Atlanta, so domed, and there's a good amount of value. in that game.
Yeah, there's a lot of cheap guys. Yeah, we have Devonta Freeman, who our stuff likes. And then if DJ Shark doesn't play, Conley at 4,300, Keelan Cole at 3,600. On Atlanta, we have Russell Gage for 4,400. I think Russell Gage is kind of interesting to me because he got overshadowed by how great Julio was last week. But, you know, he's on the field a ton. And he's been targeted a ton, both in the New Orleans and in the Tampa Bay game. I kind of think Russell Gage is a sneaky play this week.
Yeah, I tend to think so as well. Played 76% of snaps last week. So kind of pretty much cementing himself as that like wide receiver two guy without Calvin Ridley around. So I do like that call for that game. It looks like, man, Atlanta has a like close to a 27 team total. I still don't think they're going to be like super low owned, but like I certainly think some of the guys in Jaguars are probably going to be pretty low. Probably not Fournette, but some of those cheap guys that you mentioned maybe are low owned if we don't get like exact confirmation about Shark going into the game. Maybe that ends up being a thing. I'm not really sure at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, if Shark is out, I think people will run back to Conley because they get the confirmation bias of the two touchdowns last week, and people, you know, they're gonna love to run to that. DK Metcalf, 5,900. He's showing up as one of our top values with no Josh Gordon. I think this might be the first week of the season where I would maybe even consider Metcalf in cash games.
Well, there was a week where they played Tampa Bay.
It was week nine, he was in our optimals then. I did not play him in cash.
Yeah, neither did I. I actually ended up playing Tyrell Williams over him, who I think he did all right, but Metcalf like just absolutely went bananas. That's like the only other week that I can remember him being, you know, an optimal play for us. And Seattle is still playing for stuff. Right, if I recall, like,
big
still
time,
pretty
yeah,
much
yeah.
Playing for seeding.
The NFC is not even close to wrapped up. Yeah, every NFC team has big reasons to try this week.
Like I was gonna say, like I think obviously it's week 16, right? But there's a lot of stuff up in the air. I'm not sure how much stuff we'll have up in the air in week 17. I think like this week is very playable, whereas week 17. You know, you might see like Lamar rested. You might see some things.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get Robert Griffin in the optimal next week, dude.
Yeah, it's totally gonna happen. This week, like just looking from a macro perspective, at least there's a good amount of teams that are playing for stuff, including your Dallas Cowboys playing that 425 game against Philly. Pretty much they have to win.
That's a playoff game for both teams. Yeah.
Well, it is, but for Dallas, I believe they can lose and
still
have a chance. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Eagles in week 17 play at the New York Giants. And I believe because Dallas beat the Giants, they have the better divisional record.
And they play the Redskins. Dallas plays the Redskins, no?
Yeah.
In week 17.
Theoretically,
so things are still looking up. Yeah.
So if Dallas wins, I think it's locked that they're in. But if they lose, they're still alive. But they do not control their own destiny at that point.
I was gonna say too, because I had pretty much circled that game for, you know, some DFS goodness, and I'm gonna be honest with you. I looked at our projections, and I was looking at some of the Cowboy stuff, and I came away a little bit disappointed by how they rated relative to some of the other options on this slate. Not saying it's wrong, obviously. Total is 25. I honestly, Davis, I thought I was going to be a little bit higher for Dallas. Like, I realize they're on the road and whatnot. I think it's like it's in the 30s as far as the temperatures in that game. It's not supposed to be really windy. So, you know, how big the weather plays a factor. It doesn't look like it's going to play a big factor. I don't know. I circled it looking at the players. I'm like, but I still kind of want to go to that well. And I'm not a Dallas fan. I'm just saying, like, it's a really big game for them. They have really good skill players. This is one of those games where I could see, you know, being a Dak and receivers type of game because the Eagles secondary is so damn bad. I mean, they made Dwayne Haskins look not just competent, but pretty damn good last week. So I had circled that game for DFS. I don't know what you think, but something to keep in mind.
I really like that game too. I think what's happening with the line though is that's reflecting this reporting that Dak has some sort of injury to his shoulder and has like really only been able to like take it easy in practice basically. And you know, if they shoot him up with painkillers or whatever and he ends up being fine, I think we will forget all of this. And I totally agree with you that I think this is like a very interesting game stack game. We have, you know, cheap Amari Cooper, cheap Michael Gallup, relatively speaking. And then on the Eagles side, Aguilar 4,600 if he plays, Greg Ward 4,200, Zach Ertz 6,400 is their most expensive, Dallas Goedert 4,100. So we just have really some cheap built, like bring backs built in. And then, I mean, Miles Sanders, I think if Jordan Howard does not play, I think he is like a legitimate option in cash because with all of these wide receiver injuries, he's both the lead running back and being used heavily in the passing game. In his four starts, he has at least five targets in all of them.
Yeah, for sure. The price tag is starting to get a little annoying, but as you mentioned, like if the volume is going to be so substantial, the price tag might not even be right, to be honest. Just something to think about because at 6,400, he's like a plus two value, but his volume right now in our projections is pretty damn strong, like 65% market share rushing percentage. We have him for 12% market share targets. So the volume is certainly pretty hefty. I tend to agree with you on that one as well. I don't know. It just feels like feels sneaky because if people are really taking a hard look at projections, it just feels like you're going to end up missing out on some of these guys. You mentioned Gallup being 5,500. We have them for like, I'm pretty sure the highest market share of targets in Dallas at 21.5.
Yeah.
I really like him, but right now looking at projections, he's almost a minus two value. So, you know, just for whatever reason, I don't want to double count the matchup or anything like that, but I just might boost these guys just a little bit more so that they pop in my stuff. Cause right now they're really not.
Right. All right. So what are we thinking about Carolina with Will Greer? So Will Greer, by the way, $4,300 on DraftKings. I think he might be sneakily in play in cash games, honestly.
Why?
Just because of that offense, right? He just has so many good players surrounding him. He gets to throw his dump offs to Christian McCaffrey. He gets to throw his slant passes to DJ Moore. And then he has Curtis Samuel as the deep threat, Greg Olsen as the guy underneath. Like, and basically my theory would be is I don't think Kyle Allen was any good. And Kyle Allen was a good, like, he was like honestly a decent fantasy quarterback in terms of like he averaged 16.3 fantasy points per game, but you know he had games of 21 against Atlanta, 25 against Washington, 23 against New Orleans, had 25 in that start against Arizona. Like he was passable for some of those games, and you know Greer lets you get Michael Thomas and Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, I mean that would obviously be the reason I think why you would even like play him in cash. I'm looking at the position and, you know, with Russ being at the top and being such a damn good value, I think, you know, you might be able to get away playing Lamar at 8K, even though the price tag is really big. You know, you got some guys in the mid sixes that are looking pretty nice as well. Like, I don't know if you should force that one in cash, Davis. I don't.
He's not in our optimals are just 100% Russell Wilson, as I would have expected. I don't know though. What do you think about Russell Wilson as like a median play? Like his last game above 20 fantasy points was in week 9 against Tampa Bay. And he's now had more games with less than 20 fantasy points than more than games over 20 fantasy points.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just from a projection standpoint, you kind of just your mouth waters up. I mean,
yeah,
I always get where you're coming from, right. Though. I get it. I get where you're coming from.
He's a very hard player to project because it's not like you can ever be like, oh, let's project 70% runs for this team. You know, like that's not a reasonable thing, but that's something that the Seahawks would like. They would be like, oh, we get to run 45 times in this game. We're down.
Okay, but let's be fair. Let's be very fair. You have been touting that for the
literally the whole season.
Like literally it's pretty much every week. Oh, well, what if this is the game that they decide to run it, you know, 100% of the
time? Well, I've only played him in cash once, and it was the Tampa Bay game where he got 42. Because I thought I was like, Jameis is good enough to keep this competitive to the point where Seattle is not gonna have a choice. But like, for example, week 4 against Arizona and the last time they played, this was at Arizona, Russ threw 28 times, they won 27-10, and it was just non-competitive.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I understand it, but so where you would dock him is just making Seattle more run heavy, pretty
much. Yeah. So like, right? let me see what we have. Let me see what we have the splits in our optimizer. We're putting people. Yeah. So for example, I'm going to run the optimal doing this. We have them 45% run, 55% pass. I'm going to flip those real quick, and then I'm going to run the optimizer and see what that does. Because we all agree that's a reasonable thing that could happen, right? That run-pass ratio could split. So I'm just going to run it and see what happens.
Okay. I mean, I understand that, but it just seems to me like you're taking a hard stance, like saying that
That's so unlike me to take a hard stance.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like you at all, dude.
Yeah.
But, okay, so are we wrong though?
I don't think you're wrong. I just think that this is a thing that median projections have a hard time accounting for at the quarterback position specifically, because this median projection that we have is like accounting for him getting 19 some of the time and accounting for him to getting 42 some of the time. What it's hard to tell a projection system is that Philip Rivers, his 40th percentile outcome is very similar to Russell Wilson's 40th percentile outcome, and he's $1,300 cheaper, or Gardner Minshew, or Drew Locke's 60th percentile outcome against Detroit. You know what? And he is correspondingly cheaper. So like I think quarterback in particular is very hard for median projections to account for. Basically, I don't think it's a fault in Daily Roto's optimizer or in the projections. Yeah. It's just how I would go about building my teams. Like I would be less interested in Russ at that price.
Okay, so I'm interested in the way that you ran that run pass. How much does Russ get docked? Because I mean, right now he's in the mid-20s. My inclination is he's still going to be somewhere in the low 20s. There's no way you're going to dock him below 20.
So when I just flipped the two things around, he went from being in 100% of optimals to being in 10%, and he went from, I think, 25 fantasy points to 22.95. So it's not even that big of a switch, but that shows you how fragile those median projections are for quarterbacks.
Fair enough. With the doc that you just mentioned, he would be still our second highest projected score.
Yeah.
At 7K.
What's just even more interesting is that doing that, I got zero Chris Carson in optimals. I'm still getting Adrian Peterson, Melvin Gordon, Devonta Freeman, Alvin Kamara, Philip Lindsay.
I mean, Carson is 8,500. My assumption is he got boosted in your stuff because you ran it more run heavy, but he's 8,500.
I also let's talk about these Seattle running back projections. So we have Carson for 68% of the rushing attempts. And then combined, we have ProSize, Homer, Metcalf, and Lockett for that like remaining 20%. And then Russ with some of that run. Do you think that 68% for Carson might be light, or do you think that's right?
Obviously, this is without Penny in there. My inclination is, you know, maybe it could be 70. Maybe a touch light, but it's not that ProSize would fill in the Penny role. He's definitely not going to, but he's going to get playing time. And the other thing is, which you know, you don't seem to be accounting for, but Carson is a dude that fumbles, and when that happens, you know
what happens. Yeah, I mean, that's very true.
I'm just saying, you have to bake that in a little bit, and I, you know, it seems to me like our stuff is trying.
No, I mean, you're right. I agree with you. That's why it's the Wednesday pod, because I don't want to come in here with takes and be like, I'm fading Russell Wilson, I'm locking Chris Carson. Like, it's helpful for me to go back and look at these things. So last week, for example, 24 rushing attempts for Carson, 5 for Procise, 3 for Russell Wilson. I think those were kneel downs though, because he had 3 rushing attempts for -1 yard, and then 2 for Travis Homer, and then 1 target in the passing game for Procise, 2 for Chris Carson. But Russell Wilson threw only 26 passes last week.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I just seeing like Kamara slightly ahead of Carson in the projections, it tilts me to no end.
You want Kamara to be way ahead?
No. I mean, given the type of season that he's had, it just feels like, you know, I want Carson to be above him. And this is, I mean, we're talking about like less than a tenth of a point. And projection, it tilts me that Kamara is still ahead, and he's going to be ahead in value because he's 7,500 versus Carson's 8,500. My inclination is if you had to play one of those guys in cash, it would just probably be Carson, just because I think the volume there is just going to be bigger regardless.
Dude, imagine playing $8,500 Chris Carson in cash.
That's a lot.
Just imagine the tilt. Imagine the corresponding tilt with that. Like, you're just going to be – like, dude, what's even amazing is last week the game script was literally perfect for Carson. Like, they got up 14-0 right away, and he had 50 yards and touchdown on the first drive. And he did not get the 100-yard bonus until the Seahawks' last real drive. Like, they kneeled it out on the last possession of the game, but he started out that hot and did not get the 100-yard bonus until the very end.
Yeah, and that game was kind of weird in and of itself, right? Because Seattle got up big, and then, like, Carolina made a run and, like, almost caught up completely. I think the final score was, like, 30-24. But I agree with you. I mean, like, 8,500 is a big tag. Like, I think, you know, playing, just playing like Freeman, Miles Sanders, maybe even Lenny, at 7,200 is probably the better thing to do in cash. I'm not going to even say Kamara. And at this point, I don't know how like contrarian that is, but I don't think in cash, you know, you have to jam that in. As good as the price tag could be and whatnot, I don't think you got to do that.
Yeah,
I don't think you should, actually.
I wish that I could be touting Patrick Laird right now, but I think that I think they're going to run Myles Gaskin out in that game, which is such a bummer.
Such a bummer, but we really probably should switch gears to that game because that one's really interesting too, right?
Miami loads of guys. Yeah. Right? We are getting like Alex Erickson and optimals for Cincinnati.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize it was like that.
I mean, 5 targets, 7 targets in the last 2 games, 8 targets back in week 12. I think the difference here is I would imagine that they'll scale John Ross's playing time up just a little bit.
Okay, so that's a good point that you bring up, because I saw last week, I was actually doing Cincinnati projections, and I noticed that Ross's playing time, I think, actually came down a little bit last week. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but it doesn't seem to me like they're giving it their all to give him more playing time. He might just be limited, or there might just be something there, because if you look at his snap count, it was lower last week than the week before.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, maybe that's something to, you know, ask beat writers or try and follow as the week goes on. Cause I do kind of think that Ross would be a very interesting play in this matchup.
I mean, yeah, I agree. It's just, our volume stuff on him is not, it's like, I think I put him at like 15% market share targets. I mean, it's just like, it's not that juicy when you're projecting that much volume, but like the game in and of itself is pretty great. I think the total here is 47. It's in Miami, so you're not going to get dreadful weather. Fitzpatrick is popping, you know, pretty decently in our stuff. Obviously, it's a great matchup for him. I wonder if people are going to play a lot. Like, I don't know, with Lamar in the slate, with Russ in the slate, Dak. Like, it seems to me like no one's really going to be on Fitzy. He's kind of interesting.
When I just basically made Russell Wilson's projection worse, I started to get a lot of, not a lot, but some of, some of Ryan Fitzpatrick and optimals. Without the Russell Wilson projections, our vanilla optimals are just actually all over the place at quarterback. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick as the most, most reoccurring guy in lineups without Russell Wilson.
Isn't Fitzpatrick also like leading the Dolphins in rushing? I had seen something like last week about that, and I honestly couldn't believe it. Like that's where we're at with the Dolphins running game.
Yeah,
Ryan Fitzpatrick is the leading rusher.
Yeah, things that you really hate to see. Also the tight end position this week, man, just feels tough. Feels very tough because we don't have Higbee, right? No Higbee. So what do you do?
Yeah. Well, we don't have Higbee, and Higbee was I think Higbee's playing the 49ers, which I don't know. It still might not matter because the dude
I would have jammed him in anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting so much volume anyway. I agree. Just from a value perspective, you're looking at things that there's not a lot going on. Like Austin Hooper is the best play at 4,400, and I actually think that's the play in cash.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're playing that format, I think that's the move. But I was also going to say, like, Fant is really interesting to me. Gesicki at 3,600 is like,
Gesicki
I thought those
is the
two
one that
really
is the one that I like against the Bengals.
I like him, man. I really do like him. I think there's a good amount of value there. Like I think
cannot
Hooper
believe
is going to be universally the higher owned guy at tight end this week. I really
cannot
believe that.
How hard you and Ricky dunked on me and Drew in our dynasty league. You guys scored the highest. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the highest score of the season. You guys have Kenyon Drake and Gesicki and Devontae. You just dunked all over our. You guys scored like 270.
Yeah, it was really nuts. And you guys actually had a good week.
We scored 240. We had Lamar. Well. We had Lamar.
And I think you had a Perriman as well. I mean, you guys kind of went nuts. That was Ricky's call, though. I think Parker was my call on the draft. Gesicki was all him.
Yeah, he loves
that was
he
all
loves
him.
Gesicki.
He loves some of that dude. And at 3,600, I think that's a really nice price tag. And I mean, I don't mind being different at tight end this week because as much as I like Hooper, I think ownership there's a real chance it condenses there. So you end up getting Fant, Gesicki, you know, lower owned. And I really do like them this week for upside. I think those are nice calls. And that's it. I definitely agree with you
that ownership at tight end is going to be super condensed on Waller and Hooper. I think those guys are going to be far and away the most. And I think so. What do we think about the flowchart tight end? We have Jacob Hollister. We have him with, I think, a pretty reasonable 17% target share, not showing up as a top value for us.
Yeah.
My sense is that at 17%, I feel like our projection is low, but maybe our market share of receiving touchdowns is low. It's hard for me to say, but our projection just looks a little light to me.
So where would you boost them then? Is it on the volume or on the?
I think I would go 18%, and I think that I would move the market share of receiving touchdowns basically equivalent to the market share of targets. Or the market share of receiving touchdowns make it equivalent. Like, cause so I'm gonna go look at this and I'm gonna bet that 18. We have. Yeah, so like we have
18 pretty much.
Yeah, like we have David Moore with 10%. Like we're giving a little bit to Jerron Brown, a little bit to Malik Turner. Like I would just do the Ricky and move 1% away from everyone else and then give it all to the guy that I like, you know?
Yeah, that's just, man, you guys are incredible, man. So your move, right? Your move to move them up to 18 and 18 on the volume and the receiving touchdown stuff, it's like half a point
Yeah, it doesn't even matter that much.
I mean, like, love grinding the decimals more than the other guy.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I'm going full Klaficus.
I mean, I think it's a good play. Obviously, the matchup is going to draw people in, but I think our stuff is mostly right. I mean, what do you want me to do? Put the guy at like 20%+ market share of receiving touchdowns?
No, I don't even feel that strongly about it. It just I mean, when I go look at the stuff, I just go, okay, well, what did I expect?
Wait, I you know what I love most about you? You made me from this podcast. First thing you told me is you need to dock Russ. Now you're telling me to dock his pass catcher or like boost him because it's the one guy that you like.
Metcalf is the guy I really like. Metcalf is the I think Metcalf is the best play on Seattle this week for their price.
So dock Russ and just, you know, boost the wide receiver type.
Well, it wasn't a dock Russ. It was a team level dock, right? It was just moving them from to being a little bit more run heavy. Well, you know,
but
what? This is actually interesting.
If you do that, like what you're telling me, it's all gonna end up bad. If you make them more run heavy, the guys are not gonna pop as much as well as receivers.
So this is actually very interesting. Okay. The Seattle Seahawks have thrown 446 passes this year and ran the ball 431 times. My guess is that's got to be the most even split in the league, right? Other than Baltimore.
Yeah. I would think Baltimore. There's no way Baltimore has thrown it that many times.
Other Baltimore's got to be the most run heavy team.
Yeah, for sure. Like it's not even close. Yeah.
Well, maybe one of these bad teams. Bad teams love to run.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
The Vikings are very close. The 49ers are very close, and the Bills, more rushing attempts than passing attempts. Oh no, very close, but not quite. Very interesting.
I mean, it's very interesting, but please, like, don't do the run pass stuff that you told me earlier, because, like, I don't want you to not get the guys that you want in there.
I do this every week with them anyways, just to see what happens, just to see how much it actually influences the projection. I think if I was in charge of the projections with no oversight, I think I would legit just make it 51% pass, 49% run, I think that's what I actually think is right for this game.
Okay, so have a word with.
No,
Mr.
I'm not.
Denmeyer.
I'm not having a word, because every time I have a word, and even if I end up being right, it very rarely it's going to end well for me. So I just let them do what they do.
I mean, I'm just letting you know, man. You know, our conversations are pretty lighthearted. Drew is going to – I don't think he's going to take this as well.
That's why I – like, they know how I feel, so I don't even bring it up with them anymore. It's just not even worth talking about. I do think that Seattle – they are the second biggest favorite of the week against Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a team total of 30, and the spread is
highest
like
team total
10.
Of the week. If you have Jason Myers in your seasonal league as your kicker, Jason Myers
you're
is going to go
your
off
dollars.
This week. Yeah,
you're counting your dollars.
All right, let's see who else do we have to talk about? What are the other big decision points? This
we talked
week?
About we talked about Ertz earlier, right? In the Philly Dallas game, you mentioned. Those tight ends, like, kind of condensing on ownership. I think Ertz is pretty interesting, but comes at a $6,400 price tag. I still think it's worth it, though, to run it in those game stacks. Like, I wonder if what I should do is just run that game stack and not play these guys.
I mean, dude, Ertz's volume without Alshon, 14 targets against Seattle, 13 against the Giants, and 10 targets against Washington with 4 touchdowns over that time span. I mean, We've seen this with Wentz before. When dudes start falling off, he just peppers Ertz.
By the way, do you still think Wentz is bad? Because I remember you just like coming in here and saying that he's not, he's definitely not good.
So well, I was wondering if you still do I think that Wentz is bad? Wentz is certainly better than like the two like truly bad quarterbacks. Like I think he's better than Carr, better than Foles, better than Minshew, better than Eli, Kyle Allen, Andy Dalton, like those type of quarterbacks. But I definitely think that, like, for example, pretty much you meet someone on the street, they'd be like, oh, dude, Carson Wentz is so much better than Matt Stafford. I think probably no. I think probably like Stafford's better than him.
So, all right. So would you at least agree with me that he wasn't as good as his MVP season and he's not as bad as the season that he's having?
Yeah. I mean, this season has been horrible for them in terms of just like they just everyone's hurt. Like everyone's hurt.
I'm just saying he's been thrown to pretty much nobodies for the entire year.
Yeah.
While Dak is throwing to, you know, Cooper and Gallup and has Zeke on the – I mean, come on, Davis.
Hey, man, all I got to say, Dallas is a road favorite. They're favored in Philadelphia, and Dak is hurt.
No, I know. No, I mean, I realize that. I'm just saying, I definitely think Dallas is a better team, but I'm saying once the situation is completely different than Dak's, and it's not even close. I mean, even – you know, even Dak has a competent offensive line. Like, he has a lot of competent stuff around him. In your eyes, Dak is, like, a much better quarterback than Wentz then? Or, yeah. is that not a thing? Like, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think Dak is amazing, but you got to slow down, man.
So let's just go purely. I love doing this. Just to go purely from the numbers, right? Let's use the player compare tool on Pro Football Reference. See, this is what the GPP pod is all about. We just got to get completely off the rails.
Galbrain.
So, for their career, Dak Prescott averages 7.6 yards per passing attempt. And they both played 4 years, so this is actually a good comparison. Carson Wentz has averaged 6.9 for their careers. Dak has thrown 93 touchdowns. Carson Wentz has thrown 95. They've thrown 36 and 35 interceptions. But for their careers, Dak has added 21 rushing touchdowns. Carson's added 3. Mm-hmm. Dak averages 5 yards a rushing attempt. Carson averages 3.8. So I would say when you include the fact that, one, Dak has never missed a game, right? Never missed a game very due durable. To injury in his career. And has like, man, Dak is better. He's not like a country mile better. He's a little better though.
Okay, but I just literally got you to change your stance in like half a second. We started this by you saying he's significantly better.
Well, my true feelings in my heart of hearts is that he's way better. But if I'm gonna be on a when speaking with my head, he's a little better. Speaking with my heart, Dak is like the best quarterback that there is other than Lamar.
Okay.
It's just one of those things. Dude, it's like,
I think he's really good. But understand, my initial thing was, I think he's really good. He's also thrown, his situation is like significantly better than most quarterbacks around the league.
It's like asking you to be rational about Tom Brady.
I can be very rational about Tom Brady. Like, very.
I can't really be that rational.
Yeah, I'm right, but like I think like Brady's having a horrific season by any standard. Okay, so here's the other thing: are you also the guy that says Aaron Rodgers is not good? Because this is going to be really telling. Because I've had some pretty ugly confrontations with people about Aaron Rodgers. Like, what's your take on him? Because that might define where you and I are.
My real take on Aaron Rodgers is that, like, physically, he's probably like the best other than Lamar, I guess, like at the quarterback position. Like if you were to give me someone's physical talent at the quarterback position, I think I would take Rodgers over anyone. Yeah. The issue with him has been actually kind of similar to like Jameis in the sense that he makes the wrong decision, but he makes the wrong decision in ways that don't actually kill his numbers, because what he does is instead of taking sacks, he throws the ball away. That's good. But also, instead of making risky passes, he throws the ball away, and that's actually bad. You need your quarterbacks to be taking some chances. And actually, when you look at the games that the Packers have lost that have come in big spots, it's not like a lot of the times what you'll see is in those big spots, the quarterbacks have like they'll throw like four interceptions or whatever. But actually, what you'll see with Rodgers is he'll have 11 throwaways. Like his completion percentage will dip because he doesn't force it in the big moments. And that's actually, I think, a detriment.
But you don't think of him as a bad quarterback. Like that's not a thing for you.
Right? I don't think he's bad. I certainly don't think that he is like 2011 Aaron Rodgers.
No, but we can't do that either. I mean, wasn't that his best year? I mean, no.
Well,
I'm not saying that.
So every year since 2014, So every year since 2014, these are his yards per passing attempt. 6.7, 7.3, 7 flat, 7.4, 7.3. So I'm not even saying he's bad. I'm just saying there's a very marked difference from the MVP year Rodgers to the guy he is now. But people still think he's closer to that guy. And you know what? Like, dude, he's 36. Like, what are we expecting him to be 30-year-old Aaron Rodgers? No, I think that would be unfair.
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't think he played at that level for one season, and then he'd never played at that level again.
He really played at that level for like 5 years. Like so, in between 2009 and 2014, I would say he was one of the best to ever play ever. Like in terms of just like I think he was. I actually think his peak was underappreciated, how great he was over that time span. So over that time frame, they won at least 10 games every year. He actually was so good that he basically got a week 17 bye for them a couple times. So that messed with his record. And then whatever happened after 20, I don't know if he got hurt. Let's see who their wide receivers were in 2015. Maybe this will be illuminating.
He played 9 games in 2013. He got hurt.
Yeah.
That year. He did. And by the way, me saying that he'd never played at that level, it just from like straight up number standpoint, like he was never able to like top that season. He wasn't there. But yeah, some of the averages were pretty similar to your point of him being very dominant in that 4-year stretch. And I don't, just to clarify, I don't think he is that anymore. Like, yeah, he's not the 20s Aaron Rodgers, but like I see too many people like just dog on him.
Well, this will be a great way to trigger people. Let's like our top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL right now, let's rank them and then let's be on our way. So,
okay.
I think the best quarterback is Patrick Mahomes.
Okay. And who do you have at number two?
Dude, number two is hard. I think it's probably Lamar, but maybe you could argue Breeze, maybe you could argue Watson. Those would be my top four, though, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's really hard. I mean, the list thing is that's really difficult. I don't feel like I ever do good with those things.
So this would be the group of guys who I think like having this guy guarantees you 8 wins, basically.
Wait, but you, as much as you love Dak, you pretty much put him below Breeze and Watson.
He's worth like because
30, also 40 year old Drew Breeze.
Dude, I mean, it is what it is. Drew Brees is the running stuff does matter a ton, but yeah, Brees is better than him. Like, Dak is having a better season, but Drew Brees, like one game, I'd probably rather have Brees.
I don't know, man. That might be a real hot take for me, actually. I didn't even realize it, but.
Oh, Dak yeah, over Brees is a hot take myself. For sure.
No, I know that. I just think, I think Breeze is a little, I don't know. to me, he seems to be overvalued, and that is probably a really bad take.
It might be just because. So like last year, if people remember, like towards the playoffs, he was just done. Like it looked like his arm was dead, and it might be that taking those 6 weeks off in the middle of the season was actually huge for him. That could be a thing.
Because I mean, just from a numbers standpoint, like his numbers have been just amazing, right?
I mean,
going even to the end of his career, it's like this year he's completing 76% of his passes. I mean, that's kind of surreal. Maybe I need to check myself on that one, like really hard, because my thing has always been he might be a little bit overhyped. Like I think people overhype Breeze and then just underappreciate the hell out of Aaron Rodgers. And I'm telling you right now, I'm a Tom Brady guy, all right? I love New England. My hottest take is probably that I feel like Rodgers has always been more talented than Tom Brady.
Yeah, I 100% always agree with you. Yeah.
Always. So I just wanted to get that out there.
So this is the top 10 by QBR. Lamar, Mahomes, Breeze, Dak, Stafford, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy G.
Oh, Carson Wentz is in there?
QBR, I believe, has like some controls for team level quality. I'm not 100% on that, but I believe that is true.
By the way, I was being very sarcastic with the Wentz thing. Like, of course he's going to be there because he deserves to be there.
I have a bet with Drew Dinkmeyer that he is going to eat it on this year about Carson Wentz, though. We bet Jameis Winston versus Carson Wentz in just pure yards per pass attempt.
Yeah, well, good old Dinkmeyer is going to be losing that one.
I mean, it's probably I've known Drew for like 7 years, and this is the first time I'll ever win a bet against him.
Yeah. Wait, is Jameis in that list that you were – I just blanked. I didn't know if he was in that list.
No, Jameis is 16th in QBR because not only does Jameis throw horrible interceptions, he also takes sacks. So, like, if you're a quarterback that throws interceptions and you take a bunch of sacks, any advanced thing is going to hate you because so many of your plays are going for negative, like, success rates.
So he's 16. Who are the five guys ahead of him?
And so then it's Carr at 11, Tannehill at 12, Matt Ryan at 13, Kyler Murray at 14. I think some of the names that might surprise people, Jared Goff, 27th in QBR, Josh Allen is 26th, Philip Rivers at 21st, Tom Brady at 50th, Daniel Jones actually higher than Tom Brady in QBR, which is just hilarious.
That's really bad. That's actually really bad. I mean, I know Tannehill is having a hell of a year now under Tennessee, but he's not better than Jameis. He's not better than Jameis. I mean, I know we're just talking QBR, but I don't think I would do that.
Well, Tannehill, he just is like, this is like an all time. Like, do you remember? I know you will remember.
Yeah.
Dude, that the baseball player, the guy who was minimum salary for the Baltimore Orioles and just crushed for like 2 weeks. You got to know the guy.
Jimmy Paredes.
So this is his Jimmy Paredes run for basically 10 games. He is just going to run hotter than the sun. And like, that just is what it is.
No, really? That's all there is to this? I think there's something. I actually might disagree a little bit. Like, I think there is something, obviously not to this extent.
I mean, he is a full 2 yards and a half above his career YPA. He was a starter for 6 years in Miami. And he, like, it just is insane how much better he's playing. And I think partly you can say the coaches are doing great. I think you can say Tannehill's playing really well. But I also think there's an element of that, Matt. Like, you know, remember that Foles season with the Eagles?
Yes.
Like, where he just went, like, bananas. Insane.
This is
very similar to that for me, where he just, every throw he's making, he just is running, like, the 90-yard A.J. Brown touchdown.
Yeah.
That could have very easily been an incompletion, very easily he just could have gotten tackled. And, like, that makes throwing that one pass for 90 yards on a touchdown, that, like, adds, like, half a yard to his adjusted yards per attempt, because that's one attempt that just added the combination of 160 yards, basically, because of the way it accounts for touchdowns.
I mean, but you would agree that his situation, just looking at this from now that he's in Tennessee and his days in Miami, like, his situation now is significantly better Wouldn't you agree? Like I don't think Tennessee is like the dream landing spot, but having Derrick Henry and like I think he has a competent offensive line. AJ Brown has emerged as a legitimate guy, at least in this run. Like, wouldn't you agree he has more talent around him this time around?
Oh, he's got – I mean, you know, I think Jonnu's good. Obviously, I think playing with Henry is pretty useful, especially for how they want to play, for how Tennessee wants to play. Yeah. Like, having a running back who can just get 4 yards when they need 4 yards, I think that's pretty huge. But I consider me someone who is not buying
skeptical.
This – Yeah,
no,
I'm not buying.
I get it, and I'm not buying that it's gonna stay here. There is no way that it's going to stay here. I'm willing to just say that there's no way. But I do think he's better than he was in his Miami days. Like I think there's something here, that's legitimate, and I would have to dig in deeper. But I would think just off the top of my head, the play action stuff must be really nice, for him in this offense.
I actually think that they've like backed into it because they love Henry so much, but like play action is just effective all the time regardless of who the running back is,
right?
And so
right.
I think that they've just lucked into like, oh well, we like Derrick Henry so much, we think opposing defenses care, so all of our passes we're gonna do play action. I think it's very useful for them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think I would have to take a deeper dive, but I think he's benefiting a good bit from that, from like all the AJ Browns, you know, 90 yarders. Obviously that's going to have a real big impact in his numbers. And like some of that, right, has to be legitimate. Like, you can't just totally dismiss that because they do run the ball a lot and they have done this before and they're probably going to do it again next season. It's just, the touchdown stuff he's going to regress from that standpoint. But I do think, I just want to say, I do think Winston is better, even though he takes the sacks and he throws more INTs, like talent-wise, I think Jameis is better.
Right, yeah. Okay, last thing. I mean, we're completely off the rails, so if you wanted to listen about NFL GPPs, you turned out 20 minutes ago. I was thinking about this the other day. So of all of the quarterbacks that have been drafted in the last 2 years, I think only Lamar is a bona fide success, right? And I think I would argue Kyler is on the verge of just saying like, okay, this guy is going to have a successful NFL career. But I would see why someone who did not have my pro Kyler viewpoint would disagree. So out of all these first and second year quarterbacks, non-Lamar division, who do you think is the best? For example, let's say, you know, the Patriots, they just cheat, whatever. Brady's going to retire and they're just going to cheat and get one of these second year quarterbacks. Who is the one that you want on your team?
Are you talking about like upcoming or are you talking about like the guys right now in the league?
Guys in the league right now, you want to have them on your team for the next 5 years.
And it's not Lamar.
Not yet. Can't be, because Lamar is the answer. Yeah.
Lamar is definitely, Lamar is, in hindsight, he's the answer. But I could go Kyler, right?
You can go acceptable. Kyler if you want. I posed this on Twitter yesterday, and a lot of people, like I did it as a poll, and a lot of people voted for Kyler, but the most common response under was Josh Allen.
Oh, shoot. Josh Allen is also in that group. But no, I would take Kyler. And I don't know, maybe some of this is the fact that I saw him in college so much and like dominant.
And he was amazing in college.
And And so like some of that is definitely in my mind when I talk about him, but also looking at how his game has translated into the NFL, like it is kind of exciting. And I think Baker, there's no way that he's this bad.
I'm really sorry.
There's no way, right? I mean,
I think there's a real chance that Baker goes like full Sam Bradford, where he has three coaches in 3 years, and he goes to a different team after his rookie contract, and like what could have been an awesome, promising career just ends up being brutal.
Yeah, So there's something there, but like I don't think he's this bad, but he is having a bad year and. In a lot of ways. So it's really tough for me to talk about him and evaluate him. But if I had to pick one guy, it has to be Kyler, especially just there's so much more excitement with Kyler than some of these other names. Like, I know Josh Allen has made some legitimate leaps this season, but it for me, I think Kyler is still ahead, in at least in my head, and he would be my guy. He would be my guy out of all these guys.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he is my guy too. But I'm curious of others' opinions. So that was the NFL DFS GPP preview / quarterback arguments. Of course, we will have content up for the Saturday 3-game slate. We will, of course, have our full written content and premium podcast for the Sunday slate, and then the flagship show with Drew Dinkmeyer and Ricky Sanders tomorrow. If you're still listening to this, GGs, but F's in the chat for still listening to us talking about quarterbacks, and we will be back tomorrow.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.